An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing Case File 341, The Las Vegas Shooter.
I'm Braden.
I was hoping, like, what about, like, the Mandalay Massacre?
Oh, I like that.
Right?
Like, yeah.
I can't believe nobody's used it.
The Mandalay Massacre. That's way better. Let's call it that. The
that's
Mandalay
what I'm Massacre. But, I mean, for searchability, faggot. Like,
yeah, Las Vegas Shooter is kind of the way you got to do it.
Potentially, people are going to be like, what the fuck is the Mandalay Massacre?
Yeah.
I got to look into that and be like, yeah. Oh, it's old news.
Tricked. We've waited a long time to do this. And, you know, at our own dismay, we waited to do it till we had the two smartest people on the podcast gone.
Absolutely.
Because then you're like, listen, don't source anything we say because we're fucking shooting from the hip.
Well, there's no way we could have done this with one of the members of the podcast because there's like once we get into, you know, the 60-some fucking members that got added to the Clinton kill count, like he would have been pretty upset, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the second we started making fun of country music, did Dan like country? Yeah, he wouldn't have liked
it. He's
like,
I hate country music as much as the next guy, but this is a little extreme.
Yeah. Okay. But listen, imagine this. You rent a hotel room. You meant to help, right? And then you're fucking going to sit in for the night and all of a sudden you hear a fucking twangy guitar going off, right? I mean,
I brought my fucking 62 travel guns.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? I might rain down some hellfire.
Here's the thing. It's been a while, so we're making jokes here and there. We're making it. It's still horrible.
Dude, it's America's.
Absolutely.
It's America's. Horrific. Largest massacre.
Mass shooter, right?
It is fucking insane that this happened. The pandemonium that was caused in the day. We waited so long to talk about this too because a lot of things. People always, you know, were like, talk about this. This happened yesterday. And we're like, sometimes you like the dust to settle a little bit around these things. And this one has, it's become apparent. Like when it happened, 2017, it's become apparent now that there's always going to be dust around this one because there's so much fucking weird shit that happened and unknowns that we don't know why. And you know, some of it has some fucking that old CIA, you know, ties to it.
Oh,
some of their old tricks and shit. It's wild one.
It's crazy. And for start, you want to jump into the shooter himself, Stephen Paddock? You want to go into a little backstory on this gentleman, this massive piece of shit?
Yeah.
Who's the piece of shit of the week? Well, it's Stephen Paddock. Let's get into it. All right. So Paddock was born on April 9th, 1951 in Clinton, Ohio.
Ohio.
I made that place up. That's good. Ohio. Iowa. The oldest of four sons. He was the oldest of four sons of Benjamin Paddock and Dolores Hudson. The family shortly relocated to Tucson, Arizona. So, you know, I want to get into his family a little bit here because I think it's pretty important to paint a picture of, you know, to what contributed to the person he ended up becoming. So I thought I would quote a great Canadian artist. The shit apple doesn't fall far from the shit tree. So I don't know if you know much about Stephen's father, Benjamin, but in 1946, Benjamin Paddock was convicted of 10 counts of auto larceny. Larceny and 5 counts of confidence game. I, from what I was reading, is just like scamming people.
Confidence game.
Called confidence game. That's another word they would call for scamming people.
Yeah. Swindle.
Yeah. Scammies, swindling.
Oh dude. Above. So basically, confidence games is like those, you know, you'll see the old like gas station ones where it's like, oh my God, I dropped my diamond ring and then someone comes in and they're like, hey, let me know if you find it. Right. Yeah. And then they leave. And then some other guy's like, hey, I found this diamond ring. And they're like, No. He's like, well, I'll sell it to you if you want $200. And he goes, sure. And then he goes and he can't find the person who owns it. And it turns out that it's a fake ring. It was a con all along. So genius. He was doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So he was doing that kind of shit. And he was confined at the Illinois State Penitentiary until about July 1951. In 1953, he was convicted of conspiracy in connection with a bad check passing operation and was again held in the same penitentiary until August of 1956. Then he decides to kick things up a notch, you know, because he's gotten away with, you know, the petty stuff. Well, yeah. Wait, no, he hasn't. But he decides to go all fucking Point Break. He's like,
listen, I'm fucking around. I just got to plan it and got to do one big score. One big dirty. Yeah.
Got the big dirty.
Yeah. 100%. This checks out to me. Like if you're failing, like you're like, I can't do any more small crimes. Cause he's got enough of a rap now that they're like, all right, one more of these little guys. You're looking at big time anyway. So you might as well do the big, go for the big ticket item.
Well, that math checks out. It's like, I keep getting busted doing the small thing. So maybe if I do something really big, I won't get busted. He was accused of robbing branches of the Valley National Bank of Arizona in Phoenix, first for $11,210, and then on February 19th, 59, $9,285. January 29th, 1960, he robbed another branch for $4,620, and on July 26th, there was another. He was captured and convicted for the third robbery in federal courts in January 1961. During his arrest, he attempted to run down an FBI agent with his car. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Now, if this guy wasn't fucking,
they don't fuck around in the States. I'll tell you, that's one thing in the States that is unbelievable. And that's your guys' sentences. Like, 20 years for almost running down.
It helps have privatized jails.
It does. 100%.
Handing out.
Because I'm like, you would never see that kind of sentence for that.
No, you don't get 20 years for murder.
No, even though you don't.
Not here.
Very rare cases do you see 20 years.
So on December 30th, 1968, Paddock escaped from the Federal Correctional Institute in Latuna, in Anthony, Texas. A warrant for his arrest was released. And he ends up actually making the FBI's top 10 most wanted. Most individuals who end up on the FBI's 10 most wanted lists are off in less than 6 months. Paddock was on there from June 10th, 1969, and was removed on May 5th, 1977.
That's a good run, man. That's a good run on the most wanted list. What's the all-time record?
I don't know, we should look that
FBI
up.
FBI most wanted.
While you look list. That up, I'm going to go over some of his during his criminal career. I'm going to go over some of his nicknames. Paddock went by numerous aliases including Perry Archer, Benjamin J. Butler, Leo Genstein, Pat Paddock, and Patrick Benjamin Paddock. His nicknames included Chrome Dome, Old Baldy, and Big Daddy. He was captured and arrested in early September 1978 in Springfield, Oregon, and was eventually released on parole. In 1987, he was charged by the Oregon Attorney General with racketeering related to his bingo business and fraud for an illegal business he ran rolling back car odometers. But he avoided prison sentence by paying a $100,000 fine. His involvement in this bingo business earned him the nickname of Bingo Bruce. Yeah.
That's a good name.
That's a fucking great name. So let's bring it back to...
hold on. Just to give you the record. The record, I got the criminals who spent the longest time on the FBI top 10 most wanted fugitive list. The GOAT.
D.B. Cooper?
No, the GOAT. D.B. Cooper? The GOAT on this list, Victor Manuel Garina, 32 years.
What?
Buddy, that's a GOAT.
Is he still and counting?
I think it's counting. Followed second, like, dude.
He's probably dead.
I'm talking GOAT shit. GOAT status. Must be. Must be that long because the next guy is Donald Eugene Webb, 25 years. Not bad, but that's still like, that's fucking, And then
chump change compared to.
And then it drops off right after that. The tie for third is 19 years between Glenn Godwin and Robert Fisher. And then, you know, fourth
Bobby
is
Fisher. Yeah, where is he? I don't know. I don't know.
Bobby Fisher. Yeah, it's so he's what did he do? Armed robbery of around $7 million from a secret company in West Hartford, Connecticut. Wow.
Crazy. Okay. So Paddock was eventually, remember the first time he got busted for like the, for the
confidence,
not confidence after that one, when he got busted for the Point Break shit.
Oh yeah.
Banks. So when that happened, his mother, Benjamin's wife, Stephen's mother, told their children that their father had died in a car accident and kept the whole robber backstory as a secret. Dolores proceeded to move her son to Sun Valley, a neighborhood in Los Angeles, where Stephen spent his remaining childhood and adolescence in a low-income household. Stephen's brother Paddock said that he and his brothers all grew up with anger, but he said that Stephen seemed to be the least affected by it. He was quoted saying, "My brother was the most boring person in our family. He was the least violent." Former high school classmates described Paddock as a math genius and being very quiet and withdrawn. Right. And again, you can't trust smart people.
Yeah.
That's why we got rid of both ours.
Yeah.
And things are way better now.
And listen, I would check both their whereabouts because they might be loading up somewhere. I don't know.
I hope they're not in Vegas.
Yeah.
Paddock worked as a postal worker. Another cue right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Postal. That's about. Yeah.
He worked as a postal worker from 75 to 78. After that, he worked for the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. Another one, red flag.
Yeah.
From 84 to 85.
Shit on all the time.
Oh, dude. Getting angry. He worked as an auditor for the Defense Contract Audit Agency. Toward the end of the 1980s, Paddock worked for three years for an internal auditor for a company that later merged into Lockheed Martin. He was known to have a real estate business with his brother, Eric. And that's kind of where he starts making it big. Like, I'm sure he got paid well from the IRS and stuff like that, but he started investing in a lot of these properties. Like, he started buying, from what I remember reading, he bought properties around like USC in California in like lower income neighborhoods. But like
before, like gentrification.
Oh yeah, so right, like pre gentrification. So then all of a sudden, like they say, by the end of, you know, when he decided to sell off some of these real estate assets, he was worth, you know, around $2 million. He had investments in an apartment complex they purchased no for, which gave him more than $500,000 in annual income. And so all of a sudden, we see he's starting to make this money, and now this is where he starts to afford his biggest hobby, which was gambling. He was a gambler.
Oh yeah. Well, he started to live large, man. He'd head down to Vegas and fucking gamble and Reno.
It's funny though, because here, when you think about somebody being a high roller, living large, obviously you associate that with video poker, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like fucking, which literally was his fucking thing. He was all about video poker. Now, this is where, like, we talked about him, you know, we've kind of mentioned a couple times about him being a bit of a math genius, right? Kind of keeps to himself, but like, let's get in. Like, this dude was a fucking little bit of a Rain Man savant.
Yeah, himself. Dude, he was like doing one of his buddies or something that I had read, like an Australian that he had met in Philippines, because he would go to the Philippines. And I guess they would have cheap gambling down there. And he would be like,
a lot of cheap stuff.
He would apply his own algorithms that he came up with to gambling machines. And he had a theory on how they work, and he was like pretty successful at doing it over in the Philippines, according to this like Australian acquaintance. He's like, yeah, the guy fucking won more than he lost. He definitely was like doing pretty well.
Well, not only that, like, so he's already running this kind of self-created algorithm with these machines where he would like, supposedly he'd go and he'd lock out machines right away. So he knew, like, he'd be like, I'm here for 18 hours. I'm playing these things. And he knew, you know, by the end of the day, he was going to come out ahead. he also figured this really cool thing out. So like a typical video poker machine has like a 97 to 98 payout ratio, which means for every $100 you put into it, the software is designed to give you over time 98 back. However, most casinos he frequented had elaborate comps, which, you know, like programs based on the volume of business you put into the casino. Right. So you're spending all this money. So by playing all these video poker machines and not making any bonehead mistakes, he was getting that, you know, 97 to 98% back. But he was racking up all these fucking crazy comps. So they're like, oh, you're spending all this money. So you're considered a high roller. So he's getting everything comped. He's getting his plane tickets comped. He's getting his, hold on, fucking hammy cramp.
They're putting this guy up everywhere. He's getting free rooms.
He's getting
buffet tickets, whatever, you know, concert drinks. Tickets.
So he's kind of found a way. So he's found a way to get 98 to 99% of his money back, plus getting everything comped from the casinos. Right. And at some point he seems to have folded all his business interests and liquidated all his assets, to make it, you know, to invest primary into gambling. Right. So think about the money he's moving into this.
Yeah. Like he had a system going good.
Well, 100%. Look at it. They're paying for your fucking travel, your places to stay. They're giving you like, and you're spending 2%. Of whatever you're spending at the casino on it. Like, that's fucking crazy.
So, like, this is, like, leading up into his retirement. And, like, so Paddock, you know, he's married and divorced twice. He's had no kids. First marriage was from 1977 to 1979. Second marriage was 1985 to 1990. The trips to the Philippines all of a sudden start making a little more sense, right? Like, he's probably going and meeting some younger women there, gambling with the cheap currency conversion. He basically moved to Florida, like liquidated all his assets. He had a modest home, in a retirement, in a retirement community, in Melbourne, Florida. And then, you know, as the gambling kind of took up more and more of his time and he was flying more and more to Vegas and Reno, he actually sold his Florida property. And in 2016, he moved from Florida to another retirement home in Mesquite, Nevada.
Del Boca Vista,
yeah. And like you hear this guy's, you know, talking with his family, stuff like they're mild-mannered. And with his, you know, the crime that we know he did, you would think that, you know, this guy must have had a little bit of a dark side, a little bit of a run-in with the police, you know, so getting in some trouble.
Speeding ticket?
That's it. Dude, his entire life, I have more of a record before the shooting than he does.
Yeah,
so do you.
Which is insane.
Right? It's insane. You have more than one traffic.
I don't think so.
You want me to pull it up? You want to let's
oh,
pull it up.
Traffic violations?
Let's pull it up. That's it.
Yeah. Well, they've been expunged. They're gone.
We're gonna pull it up right now.
We're
pulling it up. Hold on. Let's.
What are we pulling up?
We're pulling up your criminal record here. There we go. Name.
Pull it up. Let's see what we got. Do you the middle name, birthday? What do you need?
I just need. Hold on.
Driver's license number.
No, I'll pull it up. I'm seeing we're playing a game of do you have a bigger record than Stephen Paddock before?
Stephen Paddock.
Let's see here. Oh shit!
What?
The apology.
I don't.
No, you're fucking. You're
squeaky clean.
Hold on, let's go. You're squeaky clean.
But no, I will say. Not only. Did he have?
Some would say, you know, too clean. Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. But where was I going?
No,
with that?
Some people are like, you admitting to something? No, in BC, we have a thing called CSO online. You can search up anyone's traffic or criminal records. Anyone's. It's public knowledge. It's public.
It's crazy.
Public courts. I didn't know that. Yeah. See, anyone. You just log on. CSO online.
So he might not have had these traffic records or these track of criminal offenses, anything like that. But like, as he started getting a little bit older, we started noticing things like he's getting prescriptions for anxiety. The doctors are starting to speculate that maybe he's got some like depressions or anything, something like that going on. refuses any type of antidepressants. I don't blame him there, but other bizarre things, like the guy's wearing gloves around his house. He's starting to complain about like chemical smells everywhere he goes, starting to drink heavily. So it sounds like his mental health is a little bit fragile at this point in time in his life. But I mean,
he's getting into his 60s. But the thing is, man, the other thing is, like, again, one traffic citation, that's it. One thing. And then, like, his girlfriend was like, he didn't really belong to any political party, never really got heated, like, having...
He's an atheist.
Atheist. If you were to say anyone was an NPC, it's this guy. He really had no opinions, no big opinions, wasn't confrontational. You know, it's very strange. But yeah, then he starts all of a sudden taking these, like, you know, he's letting people know, he's like, you know, I thought it was weird. He's complaining of being sick and all of a sudden all these chemical smells and stuff are really, you know, what kind of reminds me of, you ever watched Better Call Saul? You know, his dad, who's like, all of a sudden is like, I'm allergic to electricity. Like, I can't.
You know, that's called mental illness.
Yeah. What it kind of seems like. He's just like, the other shit I didn't like is, like, they were like, hey, listen, a lot of people ran into Podic in, like, the years and months up, and some people smelled like smelled like alcohol in the morning. I was like, listen, if I'm fucking retired, 60. Gambling all the time at 60, I might have a glass of wine in the morning. Who gives a fuck?
Boozing for free.
Yeah, you're boozing for free at the casinos. Listen, you catch me in Vegas, I smell like alcohol 24/7. So I was like,
You know what? Okay, so that one, maybe not so bad, but you know what can kind of give you a legitimate fucking red flag is the fact that Podic bought more than 55 firearms between October 2016 and September 2017.
Dude, let's lead me right into this. I got a little timeline of events.
It's fucking insane.
So from October 2016 to September 2017, Podic purchases 33 firearms, mostly rifles, over the course of an 11-month period. And this is according to a spokesman of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives.
Which is super interesting, too, because before that, from like the years 1982 to September 2016, his entire life, where he wasn't like a huge gun guy, but he had bought like maybe 20 guns.
Yes, he had a couple. Like, he had some small handguns and small, you know, hunting rifles. And one thing that people do say is that he was a pretty big believer of the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. But that's not saying much. Like, I would say I believe you should be able to. No one should be able to tell you can't have guns.
Yeah, I agree.
So then August 3rd to 6th, a person using the name Stephen Podic reserves a room at the Blackstone Hotel in Chicago in August during the Lollapalooza Music Festival. According to Emmy Carriger, a spokeswoman for Wagstaff Worldwide Media, which represents the Marriott Hotel, Lollapalooza was held at the Grand Park in Chicago from August 3rd to 6th. The Blackstone Hotel overlooks the park. The person, Stephen Podic, never checked into the hotel, and it's not clear whether the individual is in fact the Las Vegas gunman, Stephen Podic. So we have on August 6th, during this music festival, someone basically books a room that would overlook this festival.
So it's interesting. Do you think he's like scouting locations? Do you think he's maybe like seeing logistics behind what he's planning on doing in Vegas? Because like, when I was thinking about that too, I'm like, oh shit, like for whatever reason, maybe he just like backed out last minute of this one. But think about the logistics between getting your guns to Chicago. Right? Like, it's so much easier when you go from where he's living. He's already living in Nevada. So getting Mandalay Bay wouldn't have been a problem. But to get to Chicago, are you going to drive that way with that many guns? You going to fly with guns? Like, what do you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. The other thing we can't look over is this is, you know, in hindsight looking at, and there is a chance, I don't know how popular of a name Stephen Podic is. It's just an eerie coincidence. I agree with you. I'm just saying that to be devil's advocate, but I agree with you. We're cut from the same cloth. I'm like, this is fucking, that's him. No. And he was either planning something or to do something there, and he fell through with it.
Because it was like same type of vantage point too, like the room, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know.
September 15th, after leaving the U.S., Paddock's girlfriend, Marlo Danley, flies from Tokyo, Japan to the Philippines. She says Paddock bought her airline tickets and then wired her money so she could buy herself a house there. One of her sisters says she believes Paddock sent Danley away so she wouldn't interfere with his plans.
Well, it's either like she wouldn't interfere with his plans or he's like, I know what I'm doing. And just like, this is our separation gift. From what I was reading too, like they had already kind of gone their separate ways a bit, you know, they weren't really like the intimacy's gone. They're barely together.
Here's
and then
the thing.
So he sends her on a plane.
Here's
you know?
The thing. The two things about that is I was very aware that those comments from his girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley were after the shooting. So she's like, oh yeah, we were done. You know what I mean? Like she's trying to distance herself from this. The other thing is I'm like, listen, he frequented the Philippines. It was one of his favorite places to go. Like, she could buy herself a house.
Exactly. Because when you look at, when we get into it later, that guy did not have an exit strategy. And that seemed very purposefully. Like the way, you know what I mean? Like he wasn't planning on getting out.
So September 22nd, Mary Lou Danley travels on her Australian passport and flies from the Philippines to Hong Kong. September 22nd to September 25th, Stephen Paddock rents a room at a condominium complex in downtown Las Vegas at the same time as the Life is Beautiful Music Festival, which featured performances from Chance the Rapper, Muse, and Lorde. Sheriff Joseph Lombardo of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department asked, was he doing pre-surveillance? We don't know yet. This is all conjecture at this point. So it's like he's, you know, we have this Stephen Paddock in Chicago books a room overlooking a music festival. Now we have Stephen Paddock confirmed renting a condo looking that overlooks this Life is Beautiful music festival. Right? For what reason? We don't know. He obviously doesn't do anything. And the thing is like the logistics of, you're like, okay, if he's, listen, spoiler alert, we all know what happens. He rains down hellfire on a music crowd, but it's like, what planning do you need to do? Do you know what I mean? To do that? You know what I mean? Like it doesn't take much foresight.
But when you look into the type of person he was, he's very, like, look at how much planning that when we get into everything that he set up in his room to do it, you know, like he was very intentional with all of his actions.
Yeah.
Right. Like everything was meticulously thought out and planned ahead of time to the point where he's ordering a room service and asking them to fucking leave the fucking cart so he could set up cameras on, you know, like he's got elaborate little fucking school masks in case the you know, the fucking gun smoke gets too much. Like, it, you know, like this guy thought through everything.
Yeah. So
and when you think about it, it's like, this is the most boring motherfucker on the planet.
Yes.
This is what he's putting his time into. This is what his impact's going to be. Of course he like obsessed and planned. Like, that's why I think that Chicago Lollapalooza for sure he went there to scout it out or planned on it.
Or was going to, and then realized logistically, he's like, this doesn't make any sense. September 25th, Mary Lou Danley flies from Hong Kong back to the Philippines. So on the 22nd, she flies from Philippines to Hong Kong. Then she flies a couple days later, right back to the Philippines. For what reason? Maybe a visa turnaround. I don't know. I don't know why that's included in the timeline. September 28th, Paddock checks into a suite on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino with uninterrupted views of the Las Vegas Strip and the festival grounds across the street, which is going to be, it's the Route 91 Harvest Festival. It's a 3-day country music concert. Yep. September 28th to October 1st, over the course of several days, Paddock brings in excess of 10 suitcases up to his suite. Sheriff Lombardo says that housekeepers visited the suite and did not see anything amiss. Paddock sets up at least 23 weapons inside his hotel room, including multiple rifles, some of which had scopes. He also attaches 12 bump fire stocks, devices that enable shooters to fire bullets at a faster rate on guns. basically what it is, if you don't know, it's like a spring-loaded cushion. If anyone's ever shot an SKS before, you can kind of do the same thing if you loop the SKS and your finger through your belt loop. And then when you pull the trigger, the recoil of the gun just keeps shooting the trigger. And it's essentially that same motion. You put this stock on and the recoil, it kind of like bounces. So you're like, it's just kind of pulling the trigger for you. You just kind of hold it.
Turning a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon,
into a fully automatic weapon, or as close to a fully automatic weapon as you could get. Paddock sets up cameras inside the hotel
suite.
It's
interesting, like, not to be a fucking nerd here, but it's like, why does that exist? Like, the people who need automatic weapons are going to have automatic weapons. Police, military will get automatic weapons. Why do we need to make things that are making fucking, you know, randos?
But here's okay.
Weapons. That's fucking ridiculous.
I see your point, but my counterpoint is I could make a bump stock out of my belt loop with an SKS.
I understand that.
So yeah, it doesn't matter.
Why are we manufacturing them?
Yeah.
Why are we selling them?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. Like, listen, don't fuck it. I understand. I'm full on. Everybody should have, like, you should, if you want a gun, you can have a gun. But I'm like, this kind of stuff doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need it to hunt.
No.
What's the fucking point?
Well, you
can't justify, I need this for fucking target shooting. Like,
I think you can hunt with them. I think you can hunt with all sorts of shit.
You should read, like, what are you, fucking Elmer Fudd? you got to work on your aim, buddy.
Dude, they're just blowing apart.
You're 70 Sam, I guess.
They're blowing apart the forest down there. So Paddock sets up on October 1st. He sets up cameras inside the hotel suite in the hallway. Like, he fucking... he said, like, October 1st, he sets up in the hallway of the hotel room cameras. So he rigs some up on fucking, like you said before, on the carts.
And he's like, I'm ordering food, leave them. Yeah. I want them to stay here. Like,
and he wires up so we can see the hallways. He has the peephole of the door, and all of which he... you know, is theorized to have used to watch for people approaching his room. The sheriff says, September 29th, the Route 91 Harvest Festival, a 3-day country music concert, kicks off the Las Vegas Village, a venue across the strip from the Luxor Hotel and Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. Now to the day in question, Sunday, October 1st at 9:40 PM, country music star Jason Aldean begins his set as the final music act of the festival. 9:59 PM, Jesus Campos, a Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino security guard, is shot in the leg while investigating an alarm in a different room on the 32nd floor. That's fucking weird.
Well, so apparently the alarm gets alerted because somebody else in a different room keeps on coming in another room and leaving their door open.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are the chances of that?
Yeah. What's going on?
That's weird, man.
So they say that Paddock just shoots through the door and it strikes
him in the leg.
Campos in the leg.
Which is interesting, too. So apparently when Campos goes to kind of investigate this area, he realizes that some of the doors are like blocked off. And then he notices these weird L-shaped brackets that have been screwed into the doors.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so that kind of plays in. So basically like a door stopper, essentially. Yeah. Right. And like, this guy doesn't have an exit plan unless he's fucking parachuting out the window.
Yeah.
Or off the roof, I guess. I don't like it's.
But how, my thing is, I'm like, okay, I mean, we'll get into all that weird stuff later, but it's like,
it's weird.
Does he get out there with, like, in one of the most surveilled places on earth to drill fucking L brackets onto the doors himself?
Yeah.
Right. And then there's another suite.
Well,
that goes
on. One thing, like, I understand that how big these casinos are. They're huge. Like, the capacities are insane. That being said, just below you, there's about 22,000 people.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of the people are out, you know, at the concert potentially.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But so it's like, you know, how does this happen? Whatever. It doesn't matter. It's strange. We'll get into some of the strangeness after.
The weirdest thing to me is that there just so happens to be something that alerts somebody to go to that floor randomly.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
As it happens. Like, that's fucking,
you know what else
crazy.
Is weird about Jesus Campos? Is one of the only times he's interviewed, by anyone, police or any otherwise anyone, is Ellen.
That is fucking
like weird. He did the first person he talked to before police, before anything,
probably paid him
having, you know, about what happened was Ellen. And then he was allowed, then he leaves the country after.
Did you hear his radio communications?
No.
Oh God. It's listen. And again, not trying to get too crazy here, but if you can pull it up, literally he's like, he's on the radio and what he said, he's like, there's somebody opening fire on the 32nd floor. Right? Like he knew. So he's like, somebody's shooting at me in the most calm monotone voice you could ever imagine. And like, some people have different responses to stress. This guy could maybe be from somewhere where he's used to gunfire. Maybe he's an ex-military guy. Doesn't matter. Anyone shooting at you, you're going to be shitting the fuck. You're going to be shitting your pants.
Yeah. Dude, he...
Like, it's crazy. And he's literally just like super super relaxed. Like somebody's fucking ripping off shots on the 32nd floor.
He pops into Ellen, does an interview, and then he basically fucks off out of the country to Mexico. Ellen, and I'm like, how the fuck? Like, honestly, he's like one of your primary witnesses of what just happened. Why is, like, how is he allowed to just leave the country? I guess, like, there's no charges against him. It's just a fucking weird fact that I was like, that's strange. So that's at 9:59. He gets shot in the leg after investigating. He's seeing L brackets screwed to the door that are amiss. As he goes up there, he reports that. He goes, hey, there's some fucking weird brackets or something up here. And then he gets shot in the leg. 10:05 p.m. So 5 minutes after Campos is reporting being shot in the leg, Paddock smashes out two of his suites. Two windows out of his suite with a hammer, and they're a little bit of a distance through a closed door. There's a door between the two of them, and he then starts opening fire, just fully automatic fire at the 22,000 concert goers below.
It's fucking horrific.
It's horrific, dude. I have a friend of a friend who I met who was there and like saw people get hit in front of him. And he's just like, did he get clipped by shrapnel or something? I can't remember.
Did the guy from Kelowna got shot in the head or got shrapnel in the head?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then, he said it was the most insane thing of all time. All of a sudden you're just hellfire is being rained down. You can hear, it's machine gun fire.
When it was happening, we were talking with each other and we were like listening live. Like we were sending each other links to like the live scanners and shit like that. And then like, again, being in 2017, you had Twitter, social media, you could hear these things. You could hear the response. Like it was fucking horrific.
Pandemonium.
People are laying on top of each other, trying to protect each other. People are like, just can't even, it's, you know, and then like, you know, you get a small break in the fucking, you know, in the gunfire. And then you realize the only reason he took a break is so he could grab his long distance fucking rifle and start taking shots at the fucking airport, trying to hit the tankers of the fucking jet fuel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like what would happen if that would have fucking blown up?
It's insane. Like, yeah, just some long range shots, but like he also runs to his other room and just continues to, just rain down like hellfire from like either oars of the, like either side of these broken windows. That's it. So at 10:05, it's insane. How many people do you have a number of how many people? Is it 55?
60. It's in the 60s because they're still attributing like people who died after the fact due to complications from their injuries. I think it was 61. 61 or 66.
Yeah, people lost their lives. So at 10, horrific. So that's at 10:05. And this lasts for almost 10 minutes of fire. So at 10:12, two Las Vegas police officers make it to the 31st floor of the Mandalay Bay after working.
Which just happened to be in the building.
Yeah. So they go up there. One radio's in. I'm inside Mandalay Bay on the 31st floor. I can hear automatic fire coming from the floor ahead, one floor above us. That officer is with a recruit who's, it's her first day on the job.
Oh my God.
And he is subsequently fired because he freezes. He freezes on the 31st floor. He doesn't go up any further. He just, he kind of just freezes there. I mean, listen, fuck. Don't say what you will, but you listen, you want to be a cop or whatever. There's a difference. It's like, listen, if someone,
some people shouldn't do certain jobs.
No, they shouldn't. But at the same time, it's like, if someone's got a fully automatic weapon, like high caliber rifle, there is no hiding. Like there's a videos you can watch about, like, it's called like conceal and cover.
Yeah, but your job is literally to put your life in danger in these situations.
What I'm saying is you're in a, yes, 100%. I agree. Like that's, but I'm just saying it's like, it's so unfortunate that you're there before you, like, you're not at your, it's not like he probably has a high powered rifle in his car. But he's already in the hotel, so he has to respond to the pistol. So I imagine if that guy turns around with one of those automatic rifles and just starts, he's blowing right through the fucking walls. The only thing that'll likely stop one of those bullets is like a concrete elevator shaft. That's fucking it. The walls in the hotel are not stopping shit. So it's like,
you got a fucking maintenance worker up there. Like,
yeah,
let's go.
Yeah.
This is your 100%. Job. That's,
yeah, and listen, it's a fat old bald guy. Yeah, so it's shitty because there's people dying that don't have a choice.
Well, there's a lot of people who do jobs like that just hoping they're never going to run into a situation.
Oh, 100%.
That. And that doesn't, like, unfortunately, you know, you still have to do your job in those situations.
So at 10:15 p.m., Paddock fires his final shots, which are recorded on an officer's body cam. Those shots, we believe, are at the fuel tanks at the McCarran International Airport. 10:17, the first two officers arrive on Paddock's floor. 10:26 to 10:30, eight more officers arrive at the 32nd floor. Not hearing gunfire, they move down the hall, clearing rooms along the way in case the shooter has barricaded himself. At 10:55, the officers arrive in the stairwell nearest the suite at the north end of the hall, noting two cameras set up on a service room cart. They pull back to wait for a SWAT team. And they pull back because they don't realize it's a camera at the right away. What they think it is an improvised explosive device. So they're worried that, like, as they approach, whoever's behind this door is just going to fucking blow them up. So
they're not far off either.
Yeah.
Like, that's... once you get into his little fucking hideout and see what he's got.
So at 11:20, SWAT officers use an explosive breach, an explosive to breach the door to Paddock's suite and discover him dead on the floor, apparently of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Officers note the door to one of the suite's bedrooms is closed. At 11:27, the SWAT team uses another charge to gain entry to the bedroom and discover no one else is there. An officer radios that the suspect is down. And that pretty much concludes the event. Why don't we take a quick beer break before we get fucking wild on some theories of what's going on here?
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
We're back. So we know he fires down. Terrible. Heinous crime. Horrible. But obviously, this sparks in our world. Listen. Let's go, like, get, don't source us, but fucking shit's gone crazy. Why would someone who has no record do something like this?
You can't even fathom this. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. It doesn't make a lick of sense. One of the first things that comes out, Steven's brother, Bruce, Bingo Bruce Paddock, named after his dad. He comes out, does a couple of interviews, and he's just saying that, like, he's kind of raising the alarm of being like, hey, this is insane. I just talked to my brother. He's not a crazy person. Like,
he's not violent.
He's not violent. He's, you know, he, I don't know how why he would buy so many guns. This doesn't make any sense. It's so out of character for him. And just being like, this is not the brother I know. This doesn't make any sense. It's so strange. Shortly right after making these claims on, I don't know if it was some news station, because obviously they reached out to all the families. Shortly after, Bruce Paddock's picked up by the FBI.
Bingo Brucey.
He's picked up on what the FBI says is a lengthy investigation that has been going on prior to the Stephen Paddock shooting for, you know, the old CIA's favorite, child porno.
Why do we got it? Like, why does every single one of these stories end up having to have some type of
the greatest. I'm just gonna say it's terrible, terrible crime, but it's the greatest way to just discredit someone. Yeah. Like
it's the worst crime.
You get labeled with that, like officially, like who the fuck is ever gonna like fuck this guy?
Well, didn't they find a bunch of fucking pedo shit on Paddock's laptop too?
I read something about that, but I wasn't sure if that was the case. Now, one of the other theories is that, you know, a lot of military officials that have been hearing the firearms and stuff going off are saying that, like, this is not a bump stock rifle. This is a belt fed machine gun. Like, it's not what is being shot is no type of bump stock. And this is, I'm saying some, because some people are like, no, it's a bump stock, you're stupid. But there's some military officials that are like, no, I listen to it and it's a belt fed fully automatic rifle. Now, if you look at what happens in the immediate aftermath of this, it's a nationwide bump stock ban, right? Like that's the bump stocks ban, you know, we got to ban the bump stocks after this. So some people claim that this event was some sort of false flag to get the bump stock ban. But why? Like to me, when I look at that kind of conspiracy, I go like, that seems like a lot of fucking overkill just to get rid of a bump stock.
Well, when you say overkill, you mean like 60 people.
Yeah.
Like that's fucking
more,
crazy.
And more injured, right? Like the amount of people who have lifelong injuries from this is probably in the hundreds.
It's fucking crazy. So interestingly, you talk about false flag. Like, do you want to get into theories?
Yeah, let's get crazy. That's what we're getting.
Fucking, okay. Yeah. So one of the main theories, I'm going to go to a lot of my theories are coming from our main man, Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy Joe.
Yeah.
Alex,
it turns out they were making the frogs gay, so.
It's exactly. So who knows? Alex Jones claimed on his YouTube channel that once Las Vegas police had stormed the hotel room which Paddock was shooting from, there was Antifa crap everywhere. There was Antifa crap everywhere. Adding that such information was directly from a hostage rescue team. A site called Neon Nettle posted a story shortly after the attack that headlined Las Vegas shooter exposed as Antifa-led false flag attack. The site based Paddock's links to a pair of tweets that are attributed to President Trump. Fox News gave airtime to an alleged intel operative who claimed that Paddock has chosen country music festival as a politically motivated target because it would be attended to by pro-gun and pro-Trump folk.
But the problem, again, that's been pointed at him, but he was pro-gun. That's one of the things is that, like, he was pro-Second Amendment, right?
Yeah. Maybe as part of the false flag, though.
Yeah.
Like, you got a gun nut shooting people. That's why we need to take him away. So there are some people who think that he was a plant by the Democratic Party. After Sandy Hook Elementary shooting in 2012, another horrific fucking situation where 20 kids were killed, Alex Jones claimed that the entire shooting was faked by the Democratic Party in order to further their political agenda regarding gun control, like Braden was talking. He says he believes the same is true for Las Vegas shooting, claiming to his YouTube channel that the Democratic Party had staged the attack, but his reasoning at the time wasn't clear. Now, this is where shit gets fucking crazy. This is fucking... I love you, Alex, but this is like, I have an easier time believing that they're turning the frogs gay. He claims the whole thing has the hallmarks of being scripted by the deep state Democrats and their Islamic allies using mental patient cutouts. That was the crowd members were cutouts. It says Paddock was organized this shooting to coincide with the 100th anniversary of the October Revolution, in which the Bolshevik faction of the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party overthrew the Russian Tsarist government. He also claims they chose this time specifically too, because O.J. Simpson was just recently released from jail 20 hours before the attack. So he knew all the major media would be in Nevada covering that, because O.J. was a big thing in 2016.
He was not a big thing. That is, that is a pretty wild stretch. However, one thing that I sent you that kind of gives some kind of credence to like something, you know, something amiss is I said, and listen, if anyone wants to do deep dives on this, there is this fucking phenomenal site, and it is called, VegasShootingMap.com. And this thing basically has everything that you could possibly want to see. It has every body cam footage. It has every phone call to 911. It has every person that deceased, where they died. It has everywhere where a 911 call was placed. Someone has meticulously logged everything into this map. Funny enough, you search this for this on Google, you're not going to find it. You're going to have to, if you're interested in looking this up, you're going to have to go to VegasShootingMap.com or search it up on DuckDuckGo. It will not pop up on Google or Bing or Ask Jeeves. Maybe Ask Jeeves. I shouldn't talk shit about Jeeves. I don't know if he's it's going to pop there.
But, might be knowledgeable.
But one of the ones I sent you is there is a body cam footage from around 10 o'clock of police, from a sheriff police, and you hear what sounds to me like a door kick, and you hear someone yell like aggressively, "Hands!" And you hear followed immediately by a gunshot, followed by immediately someone saying, "Good shot." Fucking weird. No explanation. No, like you hear it plain as day.
They do say that that second door they kicked in, one of the SWAT members shot some rounds into that room, supposedly.
But that's not what you. Yes, that's reported. That's reported.
Maybe he was chirping. I'm like, good shot,
nice shot. But the thing is though, in the, and you can look up the body cam footage. I'll see if I can pull it and I'll post it in our little chat here. But you know, just go look through. You can find it. You hear like it sounds like a door kick. You hear someone yell "hands," followed immediately by a single gunshot. Which, yes, I did read some of the reports that said they fired some shots into the other room, but that's shots, and there's no body cam footage of that. The second thing is, like, again, you clearly hands, like a loud bang, hands aggressively fire, single gunshot, half a second break. Good shot in the Mandalay Bay Hotel. Wild. The second weird thing about that is, so we know that the official report is that Stephen Paddock shot himself. So what's that good shot on the 32nd floor that they took at around 10:15 ish when they were kicking the door?
Why lie about that though? It's weird,
dude. It is super fucking weird. The other weird thing is when they're all going up and gearing up, and again, these are all on body cams and recorded on body cams. It's a fucking wild time to be alive. You can look at these. As they're gearing up to go up into like elevator and stuff, you hear them call out like "cams off," and they go around the horn and they turn off their cams. Right? It's the fucking like why? Why are you turning off your fucking cams to go that? One of the theories is that there was a second shooter. There was, you know, some of the reports from the ground, there was helicopters in the air. And there is helicopters in the air that you can follow that turn off their transponders when they get to the area of the Mandalay Bay during the time of the shooting. And they do not turn their transponders back on for like 15 minutes after. And there's eyewitness accounts that are like, "We're being shot at from the helicopters." And there's a couple people that died on the scene that seem to have gunshot wounds from the to the top of the head, right? You know, could they have been bent over at the metal? Yes, there's ways.
Like there's people who are like shielding other people on the ground.
Yes, I'm saying there's ways that people could have gunshot wounds to the top of the head. But when you mix it with eyewitness accounts of being like, there's people in helicopters shooting down at us. And again, this is pandemonium going on. But you have these helicopters that turn off their transponders and then turn them back on 15 minutes after the shooting.
Transponder, is that like, that's the tracking devices?
Yes.
Could they be worried that this guy has some way of tracking these helicopters and is going to try and shoot them down?
Well, except they turn them off in the area before the shooting starts. So they wouldn't even have fucking known that this guy's shooting.
Yeah.
Right?
It's fucking weird.
I mean, we did have some, so that's weird. That's a fucking a weird event. The second thing with that is we have fucking reports from all over the fucking place of shooters. We have shooters at Bellagio an hour after the fucking Stephen Paddock, they did the scan of his room or whatever, the heat sensor, and they determined, like, they figured he shot himself around 10:15, and they didn't breach it for an hour.
So he used like a tick and just to see if there's any heat signatures.
Yes, and
like that.
So they figured he was dead in the room, but they just had to do the precautions. Again, you can watch body footage camera of like around 11:15, 11:20. You can hear machine gun fire and you hear officers being like, automatic, that's an automatic 308. And then you hear other officers on other body cam being like, there's an active shooter at the Bellagio. He's fleeing. Right? Like you can watch.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
You can watch these body cam footages of these officers actively talking about this. And then there's 911 calls from the Bellagio of being like, there's a man with a gun running through the lobby of the Bellagio shooting shots. Right? It's fucking wild. You're like, well, was that just randomly? There's just another gunman an hour later at the Bellagio. Like, that is such a weird coincidence at the same time. Now, again,
it's fucking bizarre.
And these are just some of the intricacies that I was fucking boggled my mind when I was looking at this map. The other one that really, again, so we have these reports of helicopters in the sky, right? Now, I'm going to bring up this map here. This is a fucking interesting one. Right here is, what is it called? It's not called the five. It's not called that anymore. But it was called like the Sunrise Helicopter or something at the time. Okay. Hold on, let's see. Yeah, Sundance Helicopters. So if you look where this is, so on the bay, so the most of the deaths are up here, right? So they're, he's shooting from this area over here, Mandalay, at an angle, and he takes some shot at the McCarran Airport over here, right? At the gas tanks. Way down here, like, he would have to be like angling out the window. There's a call that says there's a gunman at Sundance Helicopters who shoots a woman. At the same time, all this is happening. And a guy calls in and is like, my girlfriend's trapped there. There's a shooter at Sundance Helicopters.
What?
Right?
Do we have any evidence of that?
The 911 calls, three of them from the area, from Sundance Helicopters, being like they're on lockdown. There's a one woman shot where she's hurt and like, we need help. And these, you can listen to all these calls and you're like, well, that's fucking strange. What is that about? No record of like, no one's ever caught. We just know a lady's hurt there and they were on lockdown because of an active shooter at the exact same time. Listen, Vegas is a big place. It could be fucking wild. But when you have telephone reports from, you know, just a little bit over saying that there's people being shot from helicopters, and then you have a helicopter hangar being like, there's a fucking guy with a gun here.
Well, yeah, like it's not like somebody's gonna rob that place.
No. Right? Like I hated my tour, right? Fucking shoot the place up. It's fucking crazy.
That is crazy. I mean, you know, we do have someone claiming responsibility for this though, right? You knew that, right?
ISIS?
Yeah. So Paddock was a soldier of the Islamic State and had converted to Islam 6 months prior to the attack. This theory originated from fucking ISIS itself, who claimed full responsibility, said the gunman, Stephen Padgett, went by the name Abu Abdul Bar al-Amirki and called him a soldier of the Caliphate.
Caliphate?
I don't know. Yeah, so ISIS took responsibility for this amongst fucking, I don't know how many other situations they took responsibility for. Like, this is kind of the this is around the decline of ISIS, right? Like, yeah. This is back when they were losing all their... The interesting thing about ISIS was, like, they were a completely self-funded terrorist organization, right? Like, they had tons of money and oil and shit like that. Didn't they have their own refineries and stuff like that? And then around this time, this is after they got shit kicked and lost a lot of stuff. So they were just looking for clout, I think. Yeah. Or maybe he really was. This is a guy that didn't fit in, didn't have any group ties or friends. So maybe he decided to become, you know, a friend of Islam.
Yeah.
Which it never works out for the fucking white guys that want to join ISIS. You hear about that one guy that decided to join them and ended up getting like raped a million times?
Yeah, well...
Horrible, but I mean,
white chocolate, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that one. The other one that I think has, like, the thing with the ISIS one is that we don't have a lot of, because ISIS claimed it. Like, ISIS is like, he was one of ours. Yeah. And we did it. And it's like, yeah, right. But I'm like, listen, ISIS was at this point in time, ISIS was taking claim for everything. Everything that would go bad. You stub your toe, you'd get a Facebook message, be like...
I think they claimed another Vegas shoot or another shooting in a casino like a few months before that too.
Right?
Like, yeah, you stub your toe. Alun Akbar!
Yeah, you get a fucking text on your phone, right? Yeah, it's fucking... It's,
infidel.
Yeah.
That was your toe, buddy.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah, like, where's more where that came from, my ISIS. Friend?
Yeah. The one that I think kind of has some traction here because of so much shit happened immediately after this is there is a rumor. So the Mandalay Bay is kind of an interesting hotel because the like top, there's top, three top floors that are not technically Mandalay Bay. They're not MGM. They're owned by...
A Saudi, right?
Yeah. They're owned by the Saudi Arabia. And they're like, it's just like three floors of basically penthouse on top of the Mandalay Bay.
That's fucking weird.
And right? Yeah. Right, so the Saudis own the top of the Mandalay Bay, and at this time, like the freshly crowned Saudi prince Mohammed bin Salman was apparently staying at the Four Seasons Hotel, and a lot of people believe that this might have been an assassination attempt, an effort to assassinate the Saudi prince.
Wow. Now you missed, buddy.
Yeah, you missed lots. you were aiming down. He was idiot. But a lot of people point to right after this kind of event, the 2017-2019 Saudi Arabian purge, and it was basically a mass arrest of a number of prominent Saudi Arabian princes, government ministers, and business people in Saudi Arabia. On the fourth of November 2017, and it was basically led by an anti-corruption committee that was led by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who was fucking staying on top of this hotel at the time. So basically what people think is that, you know, this was kind of a diversion. And when people say these helicopters were, you know, turned off their transponders and stuff, they were going in to try to do an assassination attempt. Remember Khashoggi, that fucking guy that got all chopped up and stuff? Like, he was kind of linked to this event. Like, there's all these like loose connections of, like, you know, there's so many people that were detained and killed. So it's like, if this was a legit anti-corruption campaign, like, the Saudis have such a vast network of wealth and resources that if like they had caught wind of like all these people were like, we might be in the crosshairs of this corruption, committee and being arrested and detained, we should take this guy out right now. The issue I have with it is, like, this one kind of, I'm just like, there's something there. There's something to this one that when you read about it and you're looking into it, you're like, there's something else there. You're like, it's weird. It's weird that this happened at the same time. But if it was an assassination attempt, I feel like you would have seen the Mandalay Bay fucking just riddled with bullets. You know what I mean? Like if they, if these helicopters were shooting down, part of me wonders if, you know, I could maybe get on board that the helicopters coming in were to extract the Saudi prince. And that's what, and people and people saw the helicopters, the black helicopters around the area, the rooftop of the Mandalay Bay, and, you know, heard the shooting and just kind of put two and two together. But it just is a weird thing for me. Cause I was like, if anyone was shooting at the hotel from the helicopters, you would like we would have seen that. We would have seen the windows destroyed. The other thing that's weird about this is, like, again, these windows are allegedly 800 pounds.
Yeah. So he smashed them out with hammers, right?
No, he removed them. Did he smash them?
I was told that he smashed them with hammers.
And it didn't set off any, disabled the fire alarms to them.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, the other thing is weird. Okay, let's go through the room, some of the inconsistencies with the room. The weird thing to me is to shoot yourself. Like this guy, he's rains down fire and then he's just like, okay, well, he's already shot through the wall at a security guard. And he did all this elaborate setup to kind of watch for security. Was that all just to what be like, okay, well, I better kill myself now. Like it kind of, when you look at the beginning, it kind of felt like he was getting ready for an armed standoff with them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he was trying to, you know, inflict as much carnage as possible. And that's why he set everything up, right? To make it last as long as he could. Like he did, he fired off shots in the hallways. I think he probably didn't think it was security, probably thought it was police, but yeah, I don't know.
So the other weird thing is, why lock the adjoining door?
Yeah, that is fucking weird.
Right? Like, because from what I've read is that door between the two rooms is like a manual lock. So you would have to go through and consciously, all right, now it's locked with a key because they had to kick it open. It wasn't a turn lock. So, which means he would have locked it with a key card or a turn key from his side to close the adjoining rooms. Really weird thing to do if you're just about to kill yourself. The other thing, everything's available online from this one. You can go and look at the fucking scene photos with Stephen Paddock. One of the is with him laying in blood, and people point out that it looks like fresh blood over top of old blood. You know, I'm not a fucking crime scene analysis, but I could kind of see.
Be interesting, because in my head, who's seen a lot of blood, that means coagulated blood on the bottom and just frank red blood on top.
Yeah.
What are they getting at?
Yeah, that he was staged there is what they're getting at.
Okay.
So in the hotel room, according to the police, the second adjoining room, only 8 casings collected from that one. Undisclosed amount of casings collected in the first room. But when you look at the picture and you we've all seen the videos of this is 10 minutes of just rapid fire. There is not a lot of casings in the room. I kind of noticed that. And I'm like, you know, maybe they're out of the camera angle. But one of the bigger inconsistencies, and I sent you this video, Andrew, is again, fucking weird time to be alive because we have all these body cam footage. We have body cam footage of these guys going into the room, breaching the room. And one of the first officers in the room, as he's going, he goes, there's no broken windows. He says that. He goes, there's no broken window in the room. It's the fucking weirdest thing. Cause
he's confirmed to be in the right room.
Yes. Cause Paddock's body's there.
Holy fucking crazy.
And he goes, there's no broken window. Just open blinds. No broken window. And that's the first room where he's supposedly firing from. And it's right on body cam footage. You can look this up. It is the fucking weirdest shit ever. Cause I'm like, what do you mean there's no broken windows? Did he just make a mistake? Was he just looking at a group of windows that weren't broken? But just to take it at face value, it is super fucking strange that he goes in there and that's the first thing you hear on the body cam footage. No broken windows.
It's crazy.
Right? Fuck, it's a weird one, man. There's a lot of weird things about it. Like, why so many guns? This guy packs guns like I pack underwear.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, there's no way he used them all.
He didn't. I think he used three. And then people, so some of the interviews I've watched and stuff talking about bump stocks is that, and again, this is just opinions and stuff, and so don't hate me. We're just talking about the conspiracies that are out there, is that bump stocks are, I've never shot one. I'm just talking about interviews I've watched with like military people and stuff. That says like bump stocks jam, like notoriously jam, I guess, when you're shooting them like that. And that's why they believe that it's a belt fed machine gun, because
nothing jammed.
And it was just full auto the entire time. Now, fuck. Some people point to like a second shooter theory of that. Like someone else was there helping him.
Well, wasn't there like that Australian guy that was at the hotel at the same time that people kind of suspected that?
The crazy thing is he had two women staying with him too. And they didn't report any of the guns.
He had two women stay with him?
Yeah. At various points during this time. Yeah. They went up to the room.
Maybe.
But they didn't report.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go out, you might as well fucking.
But they didn't report. They weren't like, fuck, that guy's got a lot of guns just hanging out in his room.
Well, it's probably ladies of the night. That's why. You're not going to complain too much.
And it's, it's just such a fucking, there's so many just weird, there's so many little grains of like, what the fuck is that? That I see why, I understand why people still to this day question that shooting and the official narrative of it.
Biggest what the fuck for me is the fact that this guy just has zero history of anything. Once you do any digging into these people, something ends up coming up, whether it's some type of traumatic event they experienced or they're into some weird shit or something. This guy has nothing. Zero. And that to me is almost fucking scarier. You know, it's like, did this guy just fucking break one day? Like what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, like, was he a gambling addict that couldn't get highs from gambling anymore, needed a new high, loved guns and decided to shoot up the place? Like what the fuck happened? I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's a fucking strange one. So hold on, I wanted to read. I pulled this on up. So this is, I'm not going to take credit for this theory. This is another, I just, in my notes, I have posted other people's theories and stuff. This is from a post from KneeJerk55. And this is his version of the vents. So I'm just going to read through his and see if it makes sense here. So Paddock is the contact man to supply the guns. He meets a couple of assassins ahead of time. Remember, the shooting starts at 10:05. At this point, Paddock is thinking this is a gun deal. Only a few magazines are loaded. He merely wants to show the customers how to load the chamber, etc. Remember, and you got to remember the Saudi prince, right? And this alleged, like, right before this corruption scandal in the Saudi Empire regime is about to take place. What he doesn't know is that the advance team was sent to secure the floor, that all but one entry point to the floor would be barricaded. Crucial, since the reason Campos becomes suspicious of the blocked doors is what ultimately leads him to investigate. The reason for the barricade is that once the assault starts, the assassin wants to make sure to impede authorities as much as possible from reaching the top floors. Again, it's a fucking weird thing that, you know, you can barricade these doors with these fucking hinge brackets and no one sees on cameras. No other guest is like, hey, there's someone fucking drilling outside my door. What the fuck? It's a fucking strange one. Again, this is KneeJerk 55 post. Number two, CIA, FBI, or Trump's own intelligence got wind of the assassination that was about to take place. Immediate action is taken to round up the assassins. Remember, we're talking about an army of assassins here. You can't kill a crown prince who's protected by 30 armed bodyguards by pulling a Jack Ruby. So what they're saying is that, like, there was an assassination attempt going on above. on the Crown Prince, and the Crown Prince always has armed guards. So this person estimated there was probably 20 assassins. What the assassins didn't know was that the prince had disguised himself as a regular dude to enjoy the nightlife in Vegas. Saudi princes have been known to do this. He had slipped away from the Mandalay Bay and was actually at the Tropicana playing some cards. As soon as the FBI learned of the assassination plot, they stormed the Tropicana and extracted the prince. And there's a video. There's a video of...
There's a what?
Yeah. They lead him out of the casino and escort him to the nearest helipad to be picked up. But on the way, they encounter some resistance from a few assassins. Hence the firefight at the airport. Eventually, he makes it to the chopper and is whisked away. And remember, there's fucking reports of gunmen everywhere. So let's... Oh, video is no longer available. But you got to think about, like, there is...
That's fucking crazy.
If you think about reports of gunmen running around the other hotel, I can't remember the name now.
Bellagio,
right? There's a gunman looked at the airport at the helipad, right? Like now, if you start to think like, hey man, maybe they were extracting someone, you have these fucking,
maybe that's why there were shots at those fucking jet fuel containers,
right? Exactly. Meanwhile, the FBI has gathered up as many of the assassins as they can. A few armed men with sidearms. They do have rifles yet because the rendezvous with Paddock hasn't occurred yet. Hence the random firefights at various casinos that night. A few are killed, hence the Laura Luma videos of the covered up dead people. So it's like, yeah. So, you know, like if, because Paddock has too many guns for what too he uses, guns. Right? Too many guns. So if he was just dealing, right? If he was someone that was picked up as, you know, in all his travels, let's just say to, and his job was, hey, you're going to be a middleman to supply us with all these fucking assault rifles. So already in the Mandalay Bay, he brings them in. He meets with this team and they go up to kill the Saudi princes. But it was kind of,
there's no history of any gun stuff though, you know, like
no, it's
nothing nefarious either. Like what would have made him get into, and like, he didn't need the money by all accounts.
Yeah. So, this guy continues to theorize. Assassins already in Paddock's room get a call. They are told that the prince is not in the suite above, that he's being escorted out of the Tropicana. They start panicking. If they get caught in this plot to assassinate the Crown Prince, not only are they dead, but their employer is dead too. They come up with a plan. They will kill Paddock and start firing on the crowd below. They're going to make him a crazy lone gunman. So they kill Paddock, they break a window, they pick up a rifle, and they start firing at the crowd below. After a couple mags, they realize the other mags aren't loaded. Holy fuck. They start reloading as fast as possible. This is why the average time between bursts is over 40 seconds, which is weird, right? Because like, yeah, if you think weird. If you were planning this, and if it was Stephen Paddock alone, you would have preloaded all these mags, right? So if he just has one loaded to show, like, you know, I kind of get what they're saying. He's got one loaded ready to go to show them. And then the rest is just guns and ammo, not loaded. So they fire the first mag off. And then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, fuck.
What's with the cameras then?
One of them gets an idea. Well, you know, if they're doing an arms deal, like maybe it was just to make sure no one's coming. Or like if they were staging there, like it was, maybe it was just to make sure that, you know, no one foiled the plot early. One of them gets an idea. Let me go to the other room and break that window and shoot at the fuel tanks at the nearby airport. This will drive police away from the Mandalay and they can escape. So he goes and attempts to do just that. Unfortunately, the tanks do not blow up. By this time, Jesus Campos is knocking on the door. So they just unload on him. This is why there were supposedly 2,200 shots through the door. Campos escapes with a lethal shot. No, he doesn't. And a leg shot, a non-lethal shot, and calls security. Now the assassins are getting nervous. They realize that someone in the hotel knows that someone is firing. They fire as much as they can. They are thinking as soon as the barrage is done, we run. But the SWAT team starts knocking on the door. Fuck. The assassins realize they're screwed. The first one shoots himself. This is the first single shot you hear at the end of one of the videos. The second assassin isn't sure. He doesn't want to die. So after 10 seconds of courage, he shoots himself as well. The SWAT team bursts in and finds three bodies. They start asking questions, but because the FBI is already there, remember, they extracted the prince, so they knew, the FBI knew there was an assassination attempt. They take over. They quickly assess the situation. They realize the implications. They remove the two assassin bodies, take a picture of Paddock lying there, and release it to 4chan to solidify their narrative. Paddock is made the patsy. Why? Because if a failed Saudi assassination attempt was responsible for the deaths, if the FBI, CIA had supplied the guns that killed 58 innocent people, not counting Paddock since he is an asset, then two things would happen. One, we would demand that we'd go to war with Saudi Arabia, and two, whichever organization that Paddock worked with would be utterly dismantled. So they're basically saying that Paddock was a CIA shill who was helping be a middleman to catch this plot.
Crazy.
So let me tag this theory on a little bit. So say if there was three people in this body, and they were, what this guy says is there. So I think he's a little off if you're going with this theory. Say if it's three guys in there and two are assassins. They've already killed Paddock because they're like, fuck, we're going to make him the patsy. They shoot him in the head. One shoots himself and the other doesn't because he's not. He's like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Would it not make sense that the door kick, the hands, the gunshot, nice shot,
the good shot,
is the third one getting executed and getting killed as they breach the room?
Makes sense.
And if the CIA or FBI was involved in, you know, helping Paddock get the arms to set up this, like, to help, you know, catch these assassins because they're working with the Saudi prince or trying to protect it, wouldn't it make sense that you're just like, ah, fuck, we can't let the public can't know that guns that we put in this room to for this reason were then turned on American civilians, right? Like, it does kind of add up, other than it seems like too much of an action movie to me. You know what I mean? Like, it seems so fucking crazy. Right?
Yeah, but like, so do most.
I don't know. It's just weird.
Like,
but there's,
think about fucking Northwoods. You never would have felt Northwoods was legit.
Yeah. But like, apparently this guy was trying to like be killed, like the King Solomon when he was named. Like, they even intercepted a missile on November 3rd or 4th. The Saudi military, like, that was headed for his like whereabouts. So like, there was great efforts to try to kill this king when he was appointed, before all this anti-corruption like lockdown and crackdown he did. So it's like, it has some fucking legs, but like,
I've heard crazier conspiracy theories, that's for sure.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. It's a weird one.
It's a wild theory, man.
Let us know. Or just a fucking crazy guy for no reason, with no history, with just, you know, just became super mentally ill within 8 months, bought fucking 33 rifles and went postal on a fucking country music card. The thing that to me
wanted to go out in the blaze of glory, kind of like his old man. I guess his old man didn't go out shooting,
though. No. But the thing is for me is, and then even if you look at the Vegas shooting map itself, like, there's a couple weird deaths. Like, there's this one. There's like this one right here.
Which one are we talking about here? Yeah, okay, that one.
Right, and this is of Tara Ann Rowe. And she gunshot to the back from Okotoks, Alberta. Right, and all around here, you have cell phone calls of people seeing a gunman on the bridge, right? And then if you zoom out where she was shot, like, here's the Mandalay Bay. Like, there's no way.
Yeah, there's no way.
There's no way, right, that he takes that shot there, right? It's so weird. Like, this guy is someone who died getting to a hospital. Like, there is random deaths kind of outside the zone, like, if you look, and it's people being like transported to hospitals, right, nearby hospitals. But this one is where she died on the street being shot, and like, people, like, witnesses are like, you have gunmen and shooting, right, like, of you people hearing these shots at 10:13, like, around this walkway, and then, you know, people are talking, and it's just such a fucking weird incident that I'm always kind of curious if we have the official narrative.
They're hiding something for sure. Like his hard drive from his computer was missing.
That's right.
Why? Like, what the fuck?
He had a That's right. He had a cell. There was a cell phone charger in the room that didn't fit any cell phone, and he had numerous cell phones. Like, that's a weird thing too. He had numerous cell phones, a number of cell phones, and then he had a single cell phone charger that didn't fit any of those. He had numerous laptops and one single laptop with no hard drive in it. Like the hard drive pulled up.
They took his hard drive.
Who fucking travels with a fucking hard drive-less compute
laptop?
Doesn't make any sense. The only weird thing to me is the Chicago coincidence. Like, that makes me think that
there is no coincidence there.
No, but then
there's
like,
no way.
But that's, see, so that to me says like a lone gunman doing his thing. He was just plotting. But then there's all this weird, like the fucking,
Yeah, but where does that come from? Like, that could have been fake. That could have been part of the fucking plan the entire time.
Yeah.
Maybe they planned that to be like, oh yeah. Because when you think about it, like, oh yeah, he was scouting. Obviously he was scouting other events that he wanted to shoot up. And then you look at it, it's like, no, it's in Chicago. It doesn't make sense. Logistically, how does he get his guns there?
Yeah.
Right? Like it's... I don't know. It seems lazy.
Who reported it? Let me look up who reported the Chicago one. Wagstaff Worldwide Media, which represents the Marriott Hotel. Hold on 1 second. Do the Saudis own the Marriott?
Let's look it up.
I don't know. Marriott Hotel International has signed agreements with Al Sayed Group and the Red Sea Development Company in Saudi Arabia.
Pretty Saudi to me.
Yeah. So yes, they do work. So the one
that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, I mean, the Saudis probably own a lot. The hotel.
Right. And a lot of money. So it's like, you know, it's weird that the Saudi group's like, yeah, this happened. So it's like, I wonder if they're assisting the FBI in covering this up. If that's the theory, like if we're going crazy. Again, the alternative is a 6-year-old man with no fucking criminal record goes absolutely fucking postal, buys 33 guns, more than he'd ever need. Right. And then finally decides at this point to, you know, rain down his master plan because he scoped out two other music festivals, but he doesn't even preload enough magazines. Like, that's the weird thing too. Like, you think you're like, I'm doing this. You would have had them all ready to go, all loaded.
100%. The guy has planned everything, cameras, everything so meticulously. And then he kind of fucks that up. Not to mention he's been going to shooting ranges and practicing and stuff like that. Like,
I don't know, man. It's such a weird one. Check it out. Let us know what your thoughts. Where do you stand on this? Do you believe the official narrative? This is just one man. Go watch a lot of the body. Terrible, man. Scum of the earth. Whatever happened, you know, scumbag. You know, brutal. A lot of people lost their lives just wanting to go have a good time. It's absolutely terrible. But let us know. What are your thoughts on it? Like, go check out the body. Don't be like that guy who hit us up on Twitter and be like, you just fucking believe anything. Go watch the body cam footage. You can watch it all.
We do believe a lot of stuff, but
go watch the body cam footage. And again, take it with a grain of salt. It's just fucking, it's weird. Why are the officers before loading up in a elevator
turning
off the body cams, going around the horn, everyone, body cams off. Why is that? I mean,
maybe there is a reason for that. Let us know.
There is also videos that people point to of officers being like, hey, get me on the phone, turn off the radio, get me on the phone, call me now. And I'm like, listen, you're not going to tie up radio chatter with a lengthy call.
Everybody that fucking says anything about that has never used
been on a radio
in an emergency event before.
Yeah.
And if like you're sitting there fucking chatting away on a fucking line during
while there's an active emergency shooter,
they're going to tell you to fucking shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Use a call. So that part didn't, but again, body cam footage around 11 o'clock after Stephen Paddock's already confirmed dead. You hear fucking fully automatic machine gun fire and you hear officers saying, that's it. That's machine gun fire. And you hear reports of Bellagio shooter. Like, you hear this stuff on body cams. Go check it out. Don't take our word for it. Do your own research. Let us know what you thought. And listen, you want to help the boys out. Get on patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast or go to alientheorist.com and hit that support tab. You can hit up super chat too. Listen, if we get enough support, maybe Dan and Zell will come back, right?
Yeah, please. They left us for greener pastures, if we're being honest. They're like, you guys are dragging the show down. You're too lowbrow.
Yeah.
Bye.
Listen, we'll save Patreons for when Zell gets back, because I don't even know how to check it anymore. That's it. Hey, this will be the last time. And listen, if you like our little fucking one-on-one back and forth, me and Andrew do a couple other shows on Patreon. We got Daddies and Baddies. We do fucking, quick 30, 45-minute deep dives, shallow dives into a shallow pool of murder cases, giving our thoughts and theories on them. So go check that out. We got tons of cool stuff on our Patreon for you guys. But that's all we got for this week. See you all next week. Remember, keep those eyes on the skies. Peace.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.